online. Mindy? Mark Tatchell. Welcome, Mark. Dana Higgins. I see.
Laura, none of that is coming through in the closed captioning.
Susan O'Brien. Carl Peterson. Here. Nancy Reed. Dan Rivers. Not present. Ruben Robles. Not present. Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum.
John Barber. Chairman, last meeting. Okay, I'm going to call everybody to order. Welcome to our meeting. It's the second meeting of the first day of the task force. And typically, we do 20 stop now. Don't want to keep talking.
Sure, we'll be late.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, the first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Okay. I move the minutes. Okay, it's been moved. Is there a second? It was moved by Carl. Second by Susan. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
The minutes were approved. Mr. Chairman, it's a call to the audience at this point. We have the opportunity in 3 minutes. Is there anybody from the audience that would like to say anything?
We have Corinne on the phone.
Okay. And her name is?
Corinne Cooper.
Corinne Cooper, citizen. She's out in. She's on our Zoom call. Ms. Cooper, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that the closed captioning is not picking up the speakers. If you could come closer, it might help me. But right now, the closed captioning is just only picking up my voice.
It's not coming through because we're too far away.
Oh, okay.
Let's speak a little louder.
We will try to speak a little louder. Okay.
It's
No, that's it.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay, we'll plug her back in. Can this come out for you?
Oh, yeah, that might work.
Okay. If that's it, better.
Okay. Anyone else from this?
I'm curious because I have that work on for
certain days. I can answer that, but it was slightly off agenda. So basically, yes, we are holding tight until we can advance this project. So any major capital investments are going to be part of the First Avenue. We are looking at if there are some short-term immediate safety interventions that would be low-cost and available because we don't want to invest in the corridor. So some of the stuff that we've got up there right now, we're going to let the pedestrian safety corridor with the flashing lights, the mumble strips. Those are some of the short-term interventions, and we can look at some more of those. But again, anything that's going to be pressure treatment, drainage, lighting, that's all going to be part of the first step.
So the school, we have parents, grandparents, across the street, prior to.
Most likely that's going to be tied up within this project because we can't do the and that's also things that have to be taken out or removed. We don't have any funding to.
Laura, now I have no video.
One on Blackledge that's tied to a different project, but we're going to. Okay. We'll move on to the presentation. This is the project in process. Patrick?
I'll stand near the speaker.
Try to stand near the speaker. Thank you very much.
Well,
first off, thank you everybody for joining us for the second meeting of the First Avenue Task Force. At the previous meeting, we had an opportunity to kind of do some baseline setting, get to know each other, get an overview of the project. And what we're planning on doing tonight,
I have no video.
Over the next couple of months, is really to start to go deeper into kind of the needs, the backgrounds, and the base conditions on First Avenue. So we got a series of presentations lined up for you this evening, and this is really going to be the start of our effort to make sure that we all have a common understanding of the corridor. We've been looking at the information on this for the last couple of years, so we're going to be prepared to now start bringing that out to all of you. So anticipating basically now through probably October, November, it's going to be a lot of discussion about kind of the conditions of the corridor, a lot of education, a lot of discussion. We're not really setting us up to start making key decisions at this point in this process because we want to make sure that you are armed with the information you need to really be active and participating members of the First Avenue Corridor effort. So tonight is kind of the kickoff to that. We got a little bit of the background. This evening we're all going to go talking about our public engagement process. We're going to be talking about some of our existing conditions analysis that we're starting to work on, really setting the stage for those future meetings and talking about kind of what's next as we turn from this group and kind of start to have much more of a public presence with the First Avenue projects. Well, the housekeeping, the restrooms are through these doors, so feel free to step up and you can use the restrooms that are here and to the left. I would like to thank Mindy and the Satori School for hosting us this evening. So thank you so much for your generosity. Last meeting, we were a little bit constrained in terms of timing because we had to be out of the library by 7:30. So this allows us to actually get the full two-hour agenda as well as letting all of you time to get here to the meeting after your daily activities. So we are trying to find that. So thank you. That's giving us a lot of flexibility. Finally, there's some food, snacks over here. Help yourself, please. If you want to ask before we jump in any further, we will continue to provide food at all of these meetings if that is desired, but we could also pull back at the last meeting. If we had a lot of leftovers, we could potentially over-order, but I just kind of want to engage with the group. Do you guys want us to continue to provide food here? That's good.
Gluten-free options.
Okay. All right. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Brent to provide a bit more of the project overview to talk about the extent and kind of what we'll be looking at over the next couple of months.
All right, thanks, Brent. So before I get going, is that picking up my voice on the closed caption? So,
yeah.
Okay. So again, we met last time. My name is Brent Kirkman. I'm a waste engineer and we have a consultancy that attached in the city selected. This job. I run our roadway transportation design group out of our front office in the ACR a long time. And I've run some of the biggest city CIP projects that have been done. Familiar with First Avenue, been a long time since some resident. So this map, I want you guys to get used to this map because we're gonna be looking at it a lot in the coming years, plural. We're going to try to keep it in this format, and as we see it more and more, you'll get a lot more familiar with it. But so this little long corridor, we're going all the way from First Avenue from Grant Road to River Road, so it's 3 miles, and each one of these segments is a mile. And I'll have more, and we'll have a big printout and copy as we go. We're just getting started on this. All the data's coming in. So Each strip is a mile. Grant Road is all the way up here. We're going to be starting just north of where the Grant Road project finished up. So we're going to be tying in somewhere in this area. We don't know exactly where it is. We come all the way, and then this intersection here, this is River Road. So we'll have not lots of nice labels, and everything will show up, and it'll be beautiful. But just have an overall reminder, this is Grant all the way through the River Road intersection. So big, long corridor, it's a big project. Typically the city, I think, the longest one I've done for the city is 2 miles. So this is more. But it's a big undertaking, and we're going to be looking at that. So this is just kind of the general. If you haven't been familiar with this, if you haven't done it, this is a pretty general timeline of what we're looking at. It's a long process. This goes from where we are now all the way over on the left, media construction. 2030-ish, we're going to try to accelerate as much of that as we can. We've got to kind of jump through some hoops to do that. What we're looking at right now is just this design concept report. That is our current scope of work. That is the first step in the process for a project of this size. We are looking, this is what we're partnering with you guys on, we're looking to have that wrapped up by the end of next year. And there's a lot that goes into that. So I know it sounds like a long time, but when we start going through it, you'll start to understand why that takes so long. But it's all this pre-planning stuff that sets us up for success later down the road. Is that okay, Laura? So, major scope items overall project. As you said, First Avenue is kind of a mess right now. We're really going to focus on safety and accessibility along the full length of the corridor for all users. Not just vehicles, but bikes, pedestrians, anybody who's using transit users. Safety and accessibility, improving the corridor as a whole, is top priority. We are going to be reconstructing the roadway, so all that nasty old pavement, that's going to completely removed and completely replaced. So if you drove any of the Grant Road corridors without a little construction, I guess there's a phase under construction right now. No big roadway part yet. Broadway Boulevard, complete that scale. It's complete demolition, complete reconstruction. There's going to be some significant drainage. Right now, everyone's super familiar with Navajo Wash, just up the road right now, it just floods all the time. That's a significant issue. We're going to fix that to the extent possible. We're going to clean up all that drainage. I mean, there's a lot more details to come, but there's a big floodplain that's basically from Fort Lowell, almost a half mile to the north. It's all that water from the Carson Road. We're going to pick up as much of that as we can as possible. And then last but not least, a big, big piece is the bridge. So the bridge, the existing bridge over the retail is going to get replaced. We'll have lots of good information on why that's a good and important decision at this point, but that will be replaced. So how do we do this? What are we looking at? What are we evaluating? What do we need input from you guys on? We're going to start with the existing conditions. The better we kind of existing conditions, the better we understand that, the better we are to work on it. We'll be starting with that tonight here, right after me. Felipe is our traffic engineer. To give you a whole bunch of information, overview of that. We're going to look at, we call it cross section, roadway cross section, the systems you see on the bottom. It's how we lay out the space, medians, turn lanes, travel lanes, bike lanes, sidewalk lanes, how all of this fits together. This section here, this is from the city, this is the city's preferred four lane section from the street design guide. It's 100 feet from right-of-way line to right-of-way line. So when I say right-of-way, that's got your curb, you have a sidewalk, and you should have some landscape, and then beyond that landscape is your right-of-way. That's the limit. That's the property that is the city owned, the city right-of-way, and that's our space we have to work within. And so how do we lay out this process to meet the needs of all the users? The best balance of these all. Overall constructability and construction phasing. That's a big one, especially in regards to the bridge. But at the heart of it, we have to keep traffic moving on First Avenue. We have to keep traffic moving in the safe way. And we got to do a lot of work. It's not easy. And so how do we do that? How do we phase that? The 3 miles is a lot to do in one construction project. I wouldn't be surprised if when we go through this and figure it out, it makes a lot of sense to do it in two phases, or maybe three phases. Break up that work into smaller pieces. And so just overall how we do that, the strategy to implement, that's going to be a big part of the PCR. We talked a little bit about right-of-way. The existing right-of-way and property lines, it's not consistent through here. We don't have 100 feet in most locations. There's good potential for acquisitions, and so it's no one wants to disturb anybody. So how can we make all of this work together with police and some amount of disturbance possible? Really, how do we mitigate any type of right-of-way impact as best we can? Cost estimation. We've got to know how much it costs. To the best. Why are you laughing? I know we get there. It's actually a huge thing. On a day-to-day basis, normal consumers, we feel the pain of inflation lately over the last few years. If you go look at public infrastructure, like ADOT has a really good index, as well as the construction cost index, CCI. They publish it. You can go Google it, ADOT, CCI. Last year alone, ADOT on transportation projects had a greater than 30% increase in cost. In the last 5 years, we're really double. Projects are double what they were 5 years ago. How do we plan for that? How do we allocate? How do we work through all of that? So that's why cost estimation is really big. And that's going to be everything with phasing, different alternatives we look at. That's a big, how we pay for it and what we can afford is a big component of this. Traffic design, that's going to be a lot of things. The traffic engineer on the team, he's awesome. He does a ton of stuff with the city. But how do we make some road? We've got to make sure our traffic is flowing. How do we do that in our space in the most efficient way possible when we're balancing the needs of all users? I mentioned floodplain and drainage. How are we going to clean all that stuff up? Utilities, existing utilities, there's a lot of them out here. Whether it's a power pole that you can see, or it's a big water main underground, sewer lines, there's a lot out there. And if we change things, we have to make sure we accommodate those things. And we also have to do it without disturbing the existing service. So a lot of utilities, landscape, obviously we want it to look nice. We want to be sustainable with that. We don't want to put a bunch of palm trees out. Those are pretty much falling out of favor with the city. I don't know if I've ever put a palm tree on a mobile city project. But just how do we do that in a way that's a good investment long term, becomes very stable. And then there's all the social, economic, and environmental. We've already got a hazmat report running. This corridor had a lot of dry cleaners in the past, had a lot of mechanic shops. So there's contamination. How do we plan for that, avoid that, mitigate that to the extent we can? Economic, just overall drivers. We don't want to impact anybody if we don't have to. Environmental, things like noise. Yes, noise, air quality, those are kind of the big ones. So all of these factors will roll up into that PCR. So it's not just a road, it's just everything that goes into planning. And really that PCR, this design concept, gets us to that. If we do that well, then we're set up for success. Come the final design. So you, man. I'll run through them, though. You just tell me. Yeah, thank you, Brent. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us. Those are the questions that we're looking to resolve through this design concept report, or at least have a pretty strong foundation. You're going to hear us use it a lot interchangeably, so hopefully we'll get used to it, but DCR, that's the design concept report. And essentially what that is we are coming up with kind of the big picture of what this corridor line is going to look like, how it's going to operate, kind of how it's going to look and feel, answering those big questions. And Brent has seen me do this previously, but we think about it as kind of this, I'm using the funnel, Brent.
Yeah, I like it. It's good metaphor.
So we're early in the design process, so there's a lot of range of kind of decisions that can be made at this point. But the project is also the furthest away, so it's the most abstract at this point. So it's kind of that tension between there's the most ability to impact how this corridor is going to operate right now. So this is why we want to be here to call you from the community. Even though, we're 3, 4, 5 years away from construction start, as we get closer to construction, our funnel begins to narrow and kind of those range of possible decisions become less and less, and they become much more technical in nature.
So it's this first 18 months that we're talking about that are critical for kind of the big picture of how this board OR is going to look, feel, and operate for the everyday user. So we've broken this down kind of into three phases that is going to get us through the next 18 months to get us to a preferred alternative through the DCR or the design concept report. We're right here, kind of kicking off summer, fall of 2024. We are just beginning, and we'll be taking you along with us. We'll be doing this all together on that existing conditions analysis. So this fall, that's really what we're going to be devoted to. There's going to be a series of meetings here that is going to be talking about the data that we're collecting, and that's including what's out there currently, how old are the assets, how is the infrastructure performing, as well as not just the condition, but what it's doing and what it's expected to be doing. So we'll be looking at crash data. We'll be looking at traffic volumes. We'll be projecting future traffic volumes. We'll be looking at intersections. We'll be looking at bus ridership, where there's a lot of boardings. So those will be all the things we'll be providing information on more in detail as this process progresses. Parallel to that, we will also be out in the community. Because it's not just going to be data-driven. That's a critical piece of it, but we also want to hear from residents. We want to hear from residents early at the beginning of our funnel. So we're going to be starting public outreach as soon as next month. We'll be having our first kind of communication to go abroad. And the idea behind the public outreach at this point is not to be coming with any preconceived notions. We know that we're doing four lanes. That's off the table. We're not talking about widening this roadway. But in terms of actually presenting a design to folks, we're not doing that. All we want to do is we're collecting information. We want to hear from the community. What are your priorities for First Avenue? What are your concerns? What are your goals? And ultimately, we're going to take that information and marry it together. We've got the data, and we've got the community input, and that begins to inform those decisions. That's what's happening in the fall. In the winter... We have that as our next agenda item, so I won't get out in front of it just now. I'm probably going into too many details at the same time doing at this moment. Trying to back up a little bit. There you go. The next phase will be starting late this year, early 2025, and we're going to be taking all that information and we'll be turning it into actually goals and a framework for decision making. So we're going to look to operationalize all of that data, all of that input, and bring it back to all of you to how do we inform decisions. That's ultimately going to result in the development of a couple of different corridor alternatives that we'll be evaluating against those goals, ultimately resulting in that final recommendation that we're going to be looking at making ultimately at the end of next calendar year, November, December 2025, is when we hope to have that DCR wrapped up and that recommended kind of corridor alignment in all of the elements of the corridor that we would then want to advance into more detailed technical design work. With regard to kind of how all of you fit in with this piece then, the CTF role, so we're getting all this information, we're collecting the data, Felipe is out there watching cars go by all afternoon, seeing how they're performing. We'll be talking,
really.
We'll be talking to the members of the public, and then the way this information we're anticipating flowing, but we want to hear from you on this, is ultimately that will be coming back through the project team. We're going to be bringing that to all of you to inform critical decisions, but we want the information to be flowing through you as the Designated Citizens Task Force. So we're anticipating we'll be getting that information about the performance. We'll be getting all that data from the community. We'll then be bringing it to this group in the fall for our first key decision point. What that is going to be is formulating a series of project goals. What is it that we are trying to achieve in First Avenue? On First Avenue, and really what is the magnitude of that kind of importance of that particular goal? So we may be trying to solve every problem on First Avenue, but we know there's going to be trade-offs that we're going to have to make difficult trade-offs throughout this process. So when we have to put those things up against each other, we want to have a foundation of the community input and that goal development. So that's going to be our first critical decision, independent of any design decisions. What are our goals for the project? We will then use that and try to operationalize it. That's where it becomes a
matter of developing criteria. Now, we're getting into the abstract now. It'll start to make more sense. But when we're talking about that design criteria, those would be things like when we have to evaluate the configuration of an intersection. There's 1,000 ways to design an intersection. Maybe there's 4 ways to design an intersection. We'll figure that out. But there's trade-offs in all of those. What we want to do is use those goals to basically evaluate those different alternative options on how well they're meeting the community goals and the task force goals. We're going to work with you to establish that criteria. So that's all I'm going to be going through this group. An example of that could be, you know, if we're looking at an intersection and we have to decide whether we want to shorten pedestrian crossing times or put in additional turn lanes to be able to move more vehicles through an intersection and meet the kind of the level of service or the congestion reduction targets. Those things might be intention, so we have to work through kind of our goals to come up with a recommendation from this group and how we're going to design our intersections for this project. Once we do that, then we begin to put those pieces together and work with this group to receive guidance on coming up with a recommended draft alternative at that point. So that's when we start to lay out the 3 miles. What does that cross section look like? You know, how do we use that 80 to 100 feet in terms of how many travel? You know, how many travel lanes? How wide are the travel lanes? What do we have a median? How wide are the sidewalks? How wide is the bike lane? Are we having a protected bike lane? We're going to work through all of that in the spring based on those goals that we've developed. And then ultimately, we are going to make a recommendation on an alternative. After we've done that, we'll take that back to the community, receive their input, and bring that all back to this group for a final recommendation of what that design alternative looks like. And that's what we're going to advance at the end of next year. So that's kind of big picture, but what I wanted to communicate is that all of this information is going through this group for those key decisions. No key decisions would be made on this project without the blessing and direction from the Citizens Task Force. That is it. Does anybody have any questions about anything, anything more specific about that?
You said you're going to reach out to the community. Is that the
So he's actually going to give a presentation on the communications, but I'll before I have that, because there's other questions that come up. Broadly, we're going to have a number of different strategies. We're going to include online, we're going to have public input, we're going to have public open houses, we'll go to the neighborhood association meetings. We will be doing intercepts along the corridor, so the project team will be setting up along the corridor to, you know, get people where they are. And we will also be utilizing something called a community connectors program, in which we have some residents who are volunteers with the project who will be going and kind of using their social networks along First Avenue to drive engagement to allow people to participate. We've also been working with RTA, the Main Street program, and they are going door to door on every business on First Avenue, working with them, getting information out and coordinating with them, because we know the folks who are currently right on First Avenue, particularly during construction, are going to impact. So we want to build those relationships now and make sure that we have a strategy for the future people to set up for success. There's going to be more on that in a few minutes, but that's the big picture. Hi.
What is TEP's role in playing our game in this process? They have a couple player web and part line center.
So utility coordination is part of it. We have the publicly owned utilities, which is Tucson Water and Peter County Wastewater, running our water and sewer systems. That, as part of this initial, we're going to be coordinating. Actually, Telus here with Tucson Water started coordinating. They've got a big facility. We want to know where their stuff is. We have a good idea, so we can avoid that to the extent possible. And that's part of our alternatives layout for the private utilities. That's like Cox, Southwest Gas. They're all in general, they are in public right away by franchise agreement, meaning the city has allowed them to be there. But if we're changing things, it's on them to locate out of the way. So There's a lot of little nuances that go along with that, and there's always kind of an exception. But in general, that's the case. And so we will, I shouldn't say it this way, but we don't really care about them right up front with all the planning stuff, because we're going to help them move the whole team within, and we'll coordinate with them later. They're a lower concern. But we certainly do with, and that, but that's really a final design. Starting at 30% design after the design concept report, running through final, that's when we really coordinate with those private utilities to mitigate as much of that impact that we go. I will say one thing, though, about TEP, and it always frustrates me. TEP, with their franchise, what they do, they're an overhead. They are an overhead utility, and that's all that they're required to do. So, and we've done it in the past. If we wanted them to go underground, we just have to pay for that. So, and it's very expensive. So, as long as they're staying overhead, they move it at their own cost. If we wanted them to go underground, certainly not out of the question. It's just a budgetary constraint, really, at that point. So, just really kind of tease on that.
At this stage, we'll see we're going to likely have impacts with some of the power lines, based on the alignment that was already established through this DCR phase.
The big picture, too, we want to minimize, we do want to make it easy on them, because we all pay, we're all ratepayers, right? We don't want to move that, we don't have to. So we really work with them accordingly, but that really is a, well, that's the detail, that's really a final design issue.
So we're going to take all the questions from the task force first, but then we'll come.
So, looking at traffic policy, temporary money by to looking at.
So, she asked if we'll be making any improvements on any of the side streets to make the flow easier, and you're referring primarily to 2 minutes under active construction. Typically, not. We will look to mitigate as best as we can, but there are going to be traffic impacts during construction. That's one of the reasons why we want to look at phasing the project as well, because if we're bringing all 3 miles of First Avenue, including the bridge, under construction at the same time, that's going to have major, you know, travel impacts. So we're going to try to sequence in a way that is sensitive to that and look at an appropriate kind of how to sequence it, you know, a mile and a half at a time, or whatever makes sense in terms of livability and construction. But yeah, I mean, you know, there are things we can do to mitigate the bypass traffic that would be going into the neighborhoods and the local streets, and that's something we make an effort to do to make sure it's not spilling into the directly adjacent neighborhoods. But we're not going to be looking at putting additional capacity in Stone Oracle and, you know, and Camel to pick up something. Thankfully, not going on way too long, one of the benefits that we have of this project is that it has one of the kind of the densest networks of major roads in the city. We have a fairly irregular space in that we have a lot of parallel routes that have quite a bit of excess capacity on them already. So there'll be a lot of kind of options for travelers to go around First Avenue. Whereas if you go further east of the city, you've got kind of one arterial and everything's flowing through it. Mr. Chair, so typically it is up to the chair's discretion if we want to take questions from members of the public who are not sworn members of the committee. I'll refer to you. We did have questions. Not just the questions. So, if it's the first few minutes, sorry, this is the repeat. But I'm curious if there's like a way to. For this project, you mentioned some items around the scope, so the polymer will be installed. I'm wondering if there's like, if you could start at the beginning and like pinpoint a bit, where did this project spawn from? What were the initial problems that you were trying to solve? Obviously, you know, had to go through a corridor, you have to get some grant issues, things like that, but whose interests does this project serve? Yeah, mentally to everyone, is it people who are on the river or like, downtown.
I'll speak very briefly to this. We did cover this at the last meeting.
So this was a project that was identified in the 2006 Regional Transportation Authority. It was originally identified as a six-lane widening project. It's all the very issue you are talking about. Basically, moving that commuter traffic, it was anticipated to see significant traffic growth projected out from 2006 and that plan passed in 2026. Those traffic volumes never showed up. It's been pretty flat for the last 15, 20 years in terms of traffic volumes. So we actually changed the scope, downscoped this project to a safety and accessibility and kind of modernization project because the key issues on the corridor at this point largely are safety. We haven't seen a lot of traffic growth, but this continues to be one of the corridors that really shows up when we look at crash data across the city as we see this proportionate number of crashes. So that's been really that's going to evolve to this. We want, obviously, I don't want to put the cart before the horse. That's going to be part of what the task force and the community is working through, but that's kind of our starting point.
This data for all of roadway users and
absolutely. So we've got it by location, we've got cause of the crash, we've got the users involved. In particular, it's pedestrian crashes that we're seeing a high number on First Avenue. It does not. That's not showing up in the crash reports. It is the contributing factors of the poor lighting, whether they're state of the art yield, high speeds. Part of this is the So the 2006 plan was just proposing a six-lane widening. That was funded at the regional scale, but it doesn't have specific design criteria. That, this is where we get into the intergovernmental stuff. The design criteria is really established by the owning jurisdiction, which in this case is the city of Tucson. We're using our complete streets policy to inform that design. So that's something that Mayor and Council passed in 2019, and it's guiding all of our transportation investments at this point. So philosophy is basically that we will accommodate and try to prioritize all users on the corridor, although starting with the most vulnerable. So when we say most vulnerable, we're most likely to be injured in a crash, bicyclists, pedestrians, people with disabilities, children, seniors. So that's really who that becomes the who you prioritize for design and what you're trying to solve. That said, as a philosophy, we have to make very specific decisions on this corridor at every intersection and every block of the road. So we want those criteria developed as we work with the city. 30% design criteria. That's what we're going to be working on over the next 4 months with this committee.
So I'll piggyback on that if you want. So when we go through a design concept report, really when we get to the end of that, that's like a 20-30% design level. And what it is, when I was showing that roadway cross section, the back one slide. A lot of what we're looking through is how are we allocating the space? How much space do we need? And how are we allocating that? Where I live out of further on the east side of town. We've got a really narrow sidewalk that's away from the road on one side, but on the other side of the road, big road, we've got a big old 12-foot multi-use path, pedestrian path. And on that side of the road, that's where all the neighborhoods are. So we've got families and kids utilizing that. So that's kind of this, so it makes sense. You got a lot of kids riding bikes, working from school, they use that all the time. So it's a good allocation of that space. And so, you know, in some cases, a lot of urban, more in town, just have a sidewalk on both sides of the road. Well, how wide are those sidewalks? Where are they in the rest of the road? What are we doing with those? And so again, like back to my side of town, I've got that big, wide, multi use path. That's where the bikes are. Within the road itself, I have a really narrow bike lane. Because I'm close to my users and their comfort level is up off the road, but I still have a narrow bike lane on the road. Whereas a lot of what the city's doing in town, south sidewalks, but we're providing more space in the road for the bike lanes just to provide a buffer and better rushing space. So we don't have bike runners in the sidewalk. So it's just, it's really an allocation of where we're putting that stuff, where we're putting these facilities, how we're accommodating users, and then it's how do we put that into this. And then so at this DCR level, it's just we're going to take this and just imagine a big white swath. And then we're going to move that through the corridor with the least impact as possible. That's what we're looking for this group at this point. Then after that, once we get into final design, that's when we really start looking at like block to block or parcel by parcel. We have an issue here. How do we solve this issue? But it's all working within this framework. Does that kind of make sense?
The very percent design, is that just working on the alignment? Like how far?
It's big picture, it's defining this and how do we take this amount of space through the area with as least impact as possible. And then beyond that, 30%, once we get into beyond from 30 to 100, we're still final design plans. That's where we're working through those smaller areas. Hey, we've got a quarter mile where we've got a constraint through here. How do we solve that through there? But we want to come up with kind of like the idealized situation. We want to have agreement on that, and then we'll refine that further. Is that answering the question? So I mean, we're doing a little of both. I mean, we're trying to fit through, but if all we do is just, especially on a 3-mile corridor, we're really focused on details now, we just get wrapped around the axle and we never finish. We need to start with big, and that was kind of Patrick's funnel metaphor. We got to start big, and then we'll work down and we'll solve all those smaller problems. Perfect. Like this was better later.
More specific goal statement, too, is something like, you know, improve pedestrian safety comes from a lot more. That is the goal for our first avenue. That is the primary goal. That also has to inform the decision. Then you establish the criteria, which becomes the next step, which would be using something like a measure of like pedestrian level of traffic stress, which is a way of measuring how fast the cars are going, how far away from the cars the pedestrian is, how much shade there is, how wide the sidewalks are. So that becomes how we operationalize it. Then we can look at each of those decisions and say, what does this do to pedestrian comfort, which is our number one goal for this corridor? And say, okay, because this is my most comfortable option, we want 8-foot sidewalks instead of the typical 6-foot sidewalks. That then goes into our design concept. We want to run 8-foot sidewalks down this corridor. That's what we lay out. But then we have a tension of our other goal is to protect private property. Well, 8-foot sidewalks are starting to put us into that private property, so that tension is what we need to resolve. That starts to happen at kind of that later stage. We're doing that right now, we want to lay out that corridor.
And then that later stage, okay, we don't want to acquire a property here, and we live with a 6-foot sidewalk down through here. It's a lesser than our goal, but we're avoiding, and that's that tension. Okay, we can make a design revision now. We're working with that. Everyone's comfortable.
I do want to bring this back for engineering if there are additional questions that the folks have. I think that's an additional agenda that we have time to have. Okay.
So the question is there a turn lane involved? Yes. So what we're showing is just the median, but there would be regular median openings like you see on Speedway currently, like you see on Broadway, would open up to allow those left turns. It's not going to allow the continuous left turns like we have currently. This would be improving safety for pedestrians as well as motorists, but it is going to force the left turns, so there will be more concerns for business access.
Good question.
Yeah, so I mean, why not go to the sideline? Don't have people to
we are showing that as the cross section right now as the 100 feet kind of acting go down.
As we work through this exercise, we are going to decide whether we have something like Campbell, just skinnier meetings, full openings, or whether we have something that's more channelized. Those are discussions and debates that we're going to have amongst this committee in months to come. So this is just very, this isn't even a concept, this is just a cross section at this point. So everything's on the table, except for extra lane.
probably not.
Is there flexibility in setback distances at all? The city or is that
so that's a, yeah, that's a different discussion. So actually, there are the city has just changed their setback requirements. They used to require 21 feet or the greater of the height of the building. So if you're doing more of a multi-story building, have you set back through there? The city just changed the code to a standard 10-foot setback from the edge right away. So we aren't there yet, but when this corridor starts to get redesigned, we'll also be working with planning and zoning to see if we want to change the kind of adjoining land uses. So we're going to move the corridor forward first and then see what the land use.
All right. Well, thanks everybody. So I'm Lloyd. You heard me open up the meeting today. It's our job, Laura Rios and myself, and we have a colleague named Christy Ross, who you will also see on this project. You see your name in the contact list. We'll be working with Patrick and Brent and other members of the team to help deliver the information and then receive information back as we go through the process. So that's our job, is to figure out how to do that. The current plan that we've developed includes the things that you see here. Open houses, some pop-up events in the 3-mile corridor, partnering with other activities that are also taking place in the corridor. Again, trying to reach people where they are. Community events, neighborhood association. Some of the partner events, community events, neighborhood association meetings, we'll be utilizing a tactic or a group of people that we call community connectors. People who are familiar with the neighborhoods, they're from this area, and they'll be able to come in integrate into these activities and represent the project and listen carefully to how people are, their thoughts and their input into the project and then bring that back to us. So it's an additional organic way of trying to collect information from the community that is really a from the grassroots up sort of thing. Let's see, what else do I want to talk about? We'll have some agency and stakeholder meetings. So these are more at the community level. They're the sort of things that where we would be integrating or talking to other organizations that might be impacted, like you said, Tucson Electric and some of these. There's other organizations like that. Let's see. And then public meetings. The open houses, those are at certain points. We've tentatively penciled out what those look like, and so we'll be putting those into a more formal plan as we go along. Materials, the website is probably the most utilitarian, most utilized tool we have. We're 30 years into the internet, 40 years into the internet. It seems to be where people go for their information. And it's on that. There's an online comment map. If you go to the website, help me out. It's TucsonFirstAvenueProject.com. Thank you very much. It's a little long. But when you go there, to that website, there's an online comment map. You can click on the map and add a comment to that location. We are collecting all those comments. They'll be brought into the record. They'll be included into the documents that we maintain for this project, and it will be integrated into the DCR process as we go along. Next slide, please. So, had a couple of questions for you tonight, and I wonder if you just, if it's okay with the chair, if you just take a minute and help us with a couple of questions. Curious whether or not there's any recent engagement or communication tools that come to mind where you go, boy, I'd really like to see us try something like that on this project, or something where you thought that was interesting. Maybe think about it, figure out a way that it might be useful here. Yes, ma'am. Cyclovia down First Avenue. I want to make sure people online. Okay, so bring that cycling activity down First Avenue.
Are these like ideas?
We just thought that as a group that if there was some things that came to mind, if you have stuff that's not, like you think about it on your way home tonight, you want to reach out to us. But what we're hoping to do is be creative, develop some strategies that will be effective in this corridor to meet people where they are and to sort of be reflective of the types of activities and the types of values that the community has.
What about putting up signs that say like the project name and then having like a QR code that you can scan and like put that on that corridor?
Okay. Signs with QR codes down the corridor, all right. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I signed a lot of petitions there.
There you go.
No, and the bike path has a presence there as well. So you're going to get bikers that probably don't use those things.
That's great. That's exactly the question.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Yes. So, go back to the last one. One of the things it's not on here. We do. We have a flyer that we developed about the project that has the website and frequently asked questions. So we can get that to you, and that would be a good thing for us to make available to anybody on the task force that wants to help us.
The frequently asked questions.
The frequently asked questions are there on the website. So I think that we'll make sure we get. Okay. So for the people online, the suggestion was U of A housing. Check in with them, see if there's some ways that we can distribute information about the project there. Yes.
Yeah,
and so the library, it's good when I wrote it down, so other places like the library, farmers market, places like that along the corridor will be looking at it for sure. Yeah. Over here and then over here. Yep. We have that on our list to do some pop-ups at some of the transit stops and try and talk to people. So the suggestion was to contact people at SunTran, who are riding SunTran. Okay, I'll do this last one and then I'm going to move on to the next question. Oh, the next question. Well, let's go on to this next one. If anything comes up that you want to include on this other one, please let us know. Are there groups or organizations you'd like us to connect with? So I'll start with the table, yeah.
Well, there's a learning group that is a learning group to help you with the work. And it's a practice. How I am part of it, people that are learning a lot of things on the interest up there that people that live in the area also do.
Wonderful. That's great.
Yeah.
Run Tucson, a running group for those online. That was a suggestion. Great suggestion. Thank you. Yes. The New Streets Alliance are on the list. I think one of the members of our task force is going to write that down. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
In-house.
Okay.
Is that a formal group or just a general term?
Not just the people.
Okay.
Got it. Thank you.
More than a man.
Is that a group that?
Okay.
Say that again.
They're
on our stake.
Couple more.
Here and then I'll go over here.
Area that has all certain areas feel.
I think we're just starting the dialogue. I'm just going to kind of open up and figure out, are we sort of in line with where we should be and making sure that we're not missing anybody? So, like, more than a bed's on our list. Farmers market, SunTrain. So we're kind of getting a validation of what we're doing.
I'm going to go ahead here to Nancy.
I just
good, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
This is an art right on the corridor, but there are so the schools come to mind. People, the school in the neighborhood where I live is not on First Avenue. I don't know if the students are across First Avenue. Schools where students and their families are dealing with First Avenue, whether the word of the school.
I'm good.
All right.
Schools. Yeah, I thought I was gonna sneeze there. So the suggestion was schools on First Avenue or other organizations that are impacted by First Avenue, maybe not right on First Avenue. So along that corridor, and as you look at that map, there was sort of a strip along there, and so we'll be looking at that, but also sort of those impacted areas. Any last thoughts, and I'll move on. Yep.
Yes, that's perfect. We just want to make sure we have it right here, but we wouldn't know that. So that's the kind of stuff.
Yep. You
may need to think of like that to make sure we're just like, we'll make sure it doesn't.
Okay. So I'm gonna move us on then.
Yep.
And that's gonna turn us over to the next phase of the engagement tonight. Thank you guys so much. If there's more, please let us know. And we're adding that into our action plan at this point.
Yeah, just really briefly. So we're probably looking to do a soft rollout of some public engagement in the second half of September, is what we're targeting right now, and then really going broad and big starting in October. So that's kind of our schedule, and we're hoping to keep that open for about 2 months, and we'll be communicating with you throughout that, helping to ask you to spread the word to folks that you know, if you have any networks that you'd like to share that information with, if you are a business owner or have access to a school on First Avenue, like, how can we work with you to help get the word out? So be on the lookout for that. Probably we're 3 weeks out from really launching some of those.
Hey everybody, my name is Felipe. I'm a traffic engineer, and I'm very excited here to start talking about the data that we have been collecting for the project and how we're going to use the data. So first of all, we're going to talk about, we're collecting data, but why is important to use the data? And that's because we need to know what are we planning for, designing the road for, who are the users on the corridor. That's important to understand so that when we start re-indicating, when we start assessing existing conditions, we know we're going to be the users, who are the users on the road. Also, we want to identify re-indicated challenges and opportunities for all modes. Understand travel patterns. We're talking about the schools, the Sprouts, the Walmarts, the Fries. Where are those located? What are the infrastructure needs? What are the gaps? We have sidewalks, but there's no sidewalk. They're missing business sidewalks. There's a street lighting, but it's not for the entire corridor. So we're going to start talking about that kind of data that is going to help us better indicate it, identify the needs in infrastructure. Also, we talk about safety. What are the safety trends? Based on those safety trends, we can select some countermeasures. From the engineering perspective, it's important also to take into account the core elements like engagement, education, enforcement. But from the engineering perspective, how can we change the infrastructure on the corridor to enhance safety? So that's what the data we're going to be collecting, that's going to be useful. And also spectrum indicated to evaluate, the complete state alternative for this corridor. When we have a limited right of way and we want to implement, 8-foot sidewalk, we can use an MOE based on data to quantify if we reduce the sidewalk width, we still meet the goals of the project. So that's where the data is important. We're collecting data, evaluating the data, determine what are the existing conditions in the corridor, so we can identify the challenges and opportunities, so we can develop alternatives. And so the way we're looking at this, we are having three buckets of data. One is the community and infrastructure. The other one is the travel and safety trends, and the last one is the corridor operations. And this is just, a couple of sources that we're looking at this point. It's going to extend to the life of the project. But at this point, for community and infrastructure, we're looking at the census data to see, who lives around the corridor. Also, the city has an equity data strategic website that has a bunch of data around the area. Also, we're using maps and records to see, the number of lanes, the width of the sidewalks, the existing infrastructure. Then in terms of travel and safety patterns, we're taking a look at the ADOT crash database. We really went there and gathered the last 10 years of available crash data. To get more recent data, we're also talking about using that PD database so we can get the most recent data, crash data on the corridor. Something very cool that is the first time that I finished using is something called video analytics. I'm going to have a slide to show that. But it's to get, to collect data and see, evaluate near misses. Because we use the fresh data, we miss some of those events that are more often. Fresh data tends to, record the major event. Unfortunately, when somebody died or suffered injury. But a lot of cases, there are some conditions that a car almost hit a pedestrian or two cars almost hit each other, and that's not part of the crash data. So that's why we're using this. We're also taking a look at travel patterns, because the majority of us, have a cell phone. In some cases, that, GPS is recording, or that application is recording that the travel along the corridor. So we have access to some of the data, and we can determine how the people are moving, to the major attractions on the corridor. Then we have also in the northern bucket the corridor operations. So for that one, in last April, we set up a bunch of tools on the roads, cameras to collect, how many cars are on the corridor. We have the vehicle specification. We did it for every segment, cross-street in the corridor.
We know how many people are turning left, turning right at intersections. We'll improve. We also, you know, collecting travel time using INRIX. It's another database that using cell phone data provides the travel time for the corridor for, you know, long periods of time. So, you know, these are the two things right now. At this meeting is just a big overview. But for the September and October meeting, we're going to go deeply into the data that we collected and analysis how we're using the data. As I indicated, for the community and infrastructure, we have, elements, the demographics, land use, and the network. For that one, we're using census data. And land use, you know, even though this is a project from the Transportation and Mobility Department, but we're also using the, you know, we have a connection, the multidisciplinary, with the Planning and Development Service Department to see what's the land use on the corridor for existing and for future, what are the plans. And for the freeway network, you know, we're using maps, record, Google Air, video, teaching the corridor. So, travel and safety trends, as I indicated, we're using the Arizona Department of Transportation price data, the police department data, alive. We're using deal analytics and replica data. Replica data is the one that is getting from cell phones. It tells you that what the percentage of people using auto, traveling by bike or by foot, or, you know, what are the short trips on the corridor. When I go into that data later in September, or for instance, when we talk about video analytics, here's this data. I have this video here. So I'm going to play it. We went to the corridor at a couple of locations. We set up cameras at a couple of locations in the corridor. And what we did, we tracked every user, every movement for 24 hours for pedestrians, vehicles, bikes, and identify potential sources. We call it near miss. Because I indicated this type of information is not available on the fresh data. So we're taking this to a next level. You see, like, okay, what is missing on the fresh data? And observe all of these, you know, we have tons of data to see, like in this case, right turn, you know, vehicles making a right turn are, you know, they're missing or getting, you know, potential impacting pedestrians, getting to a collision of pedestrians. So if we know that these are patterns, we're going to estimate rates and analyze the data compared to that, is that we can focus our improvements to say, hey, if we improve this, we can enhance the safety, we can reduce the near miss, and we can enhance the safety on the corridor and the intersection. So we did that for a couple of intersections to understand, you know, patterns with near misses. But then we took it to a, you know, another level and say, hey, what's happening outside of the intersection? Because even though at the intersection, we have the crosswalks. So there are people that, you know, talk, you know, like one of them, you know, they walk in, one of those people. And so sometimes we don't use crosswalks. So we set up cameras outside of the intersections to see what was going on over there. And this we did that at the first follow-up intersection. So we have First Avenue, North South, all over here. So Circle K is over here. This is the same intersection four times. So Walmart is over here. You see. And you know, we have the transit stops a little away from the intersection. And we set up the cameras and we track the pedestrian movements on the approaching legs. You know, this is very interesting. I mean, we're going to detail in September, but this is, look what we found. These represent these lines. We use different colors, right, to differentiate, represents pedestrian movements crossing the roads. So if we were able to, you know, see this data, we just go with a typical city standard, for instance. I'm not saying that, you know, this is the problem, or this, you know, but if it was, if this was the challenge that we're trying to solve, the city standard calls for just lighting on the crosswalk. Well, what will happen if this happens at night? We go, we do the improvements, we put lighting on the crosswalk, and all of this is dark at night. So now we have the data that assuming that it is a challenge, and the lighting is going to improve, enhance this condition. Now we have, you know, the challenge, the opportunity to fix, and we can have a solution. As indicated, you know, for the corridor operation, we collected traffic counts. We estimated something that is called level of service, so we know how the intersection are operating. We did that because at this intersection, you may have seen there's a cabinet, kind of a box, a white box, or it can be painted with different colors. There, you know, one big box and a small one next to that one. But in any way, for that box, we got the signal timing data, so we know how much time the green lasts, the yellow, the old red. How the signal is operated, we put that in the model along with the volumes, and we can estimate how the intersections are operating. And also for travel times, we can see the travel time on the corridor, you know, the data we have access, we want to see it yesterday. In this case, I'm just going to put it as an example. The month we have the typical in town, the highest demand, which is February, and the red line over here. And that's because that's when, you know, particularly on the corridor, U of A is in session. So, you know, here schools in the area. And then we have, you know, like literally, we have people that live in the north and come down when the winter is in here. But you can see the difference, how the travel time on the corridor for river on the way to ramp varies, particularly in February, in the PM, the peak hour. And then it slightly varies over here in July, compared to February. We think in July because that's when, you know, snowbirds are not here, U of A is not in session, and also, you know, sometimes, you know, we as a residents here community, they travel, they take time off in July. So, it's very interesting to see. Again, we're not going to detail and probably like in the October meeting to see that so how we collect the data, use analysis, and go into specifics. So again, you know, these are the three buckets with the categories, the community and infrastructure, travel and safety plans, core operations. I'm going to start going into a little bit of detail on the first bucket today, and then September and October, one of those solutions. That is the most, you know, data intensive analysis. So in terms of demographic, we use the city database that is, you know, very similar. Based on the census data that was collected in 2000 to get some of the demographics on the corridor. What we did is we picked a half mile to the east, to the west, a little bit north of river, and a little bit south of Ramp. So that's kind of our board, you know, our study area. And based on that study area, we came out with the following statistics. The median household income is around 37,000. The median age around 31, you know, 32 years old. The population in that, you know, half mile boundary from river to ramp is around 200,000. The gender based census was pretty even between male and female. We have 38.7% with a BS education degree or higher. The race and ethnicity, this is combined, a little complicated, but 38% of Hispanic. 56% of white, 6% of Asian, 10% of African American, and 3% of other. It's kind of complicated because when you start mixing race and ethnicity, that percentage of education gets complicated. Households with disability is around 29%, and there's some, you know, households that don't have cars. That's around, you know, 40%. That's what we found on that. And the importance of this, the question is, how they compare to the entire city? So for that, we have a summary here. In terms of the age of the population living in the study area, it could be younger. And that may be because there are some, you know, if close to the U of A, then there may be some, you know, students living here. Around 31, you know, 32 years in the study area. Compared to the rest of the city, which is around 37 years old. Less wealthy, the income was around 37,000, versus 55,000 around entire city. But this is more educated, 37% compared to the 32% around the city. In terms of, you know, households without cars, the percentage higher, 14% versus 10%. And in terms of the demographics, well, in terms of the race and ethnicity, it's very similar. Hispanic population is a little different, but in the African American is a little higher. So overall, it's very similar. Now we can start talking about land use. So we heard the land use from the city's development, planning development services. This is the existing land use for the corridor. In this case, we went a little higher, considering the York River in South Atlanta to be the land use for the corridor. And I know it's very hard to see, but you know, there's multiple commercial categories as well as residential categories. And so what is showing here, you know, with all the, I guess, the red, pink, purple areas over here are commercial. The more greenish are the residential. And according to the statistics that we computed, around 67%, 68% of the area, of study area, is made out of residential. 60% of commercial, 8% of education, you know, we're in the school areas, and 6% of vacant. Vacant is the area. And as you can see, the commercial area are the ones adjacent to the corner. In terms of the like, destination, you know, we're talking a little bit, you know, in the meeting, well, you know, last time with the commercial. From the left of the commercial area, we have the Walmart, from Wilmore, we have the Sprouts, we have a Price, then we have to the library, we have several schools in the area, and we have another Walmart from Paloma, and another, you know, Price from Ranch. And as you can see, when we talk in September about the travel patterns, we want to see how, in some cases, they line up with this, you know, those major destinations. Let's bring, you know, very quickly, just, you know, very basic data in terms of the number of lanes. The entire length of the corridor, four lanes, has a center lane. In terms of the traffic control, there are traffic signals, traffic lights at the major intersections, and there's two of pedestrian signal crossing, one at the library, and the other one at the capital. And there is one more, the city's selling on Blacklash, that would be a bi-hawk. But as you can see, you know, taking a look at this data, to start identifying challenges in the corridor, you can see the spacing of these. There's only two pedestrian crossing. So if you want to cross, let's say, between Paloma and Plain, it's a big distance, but there is no pedestrian crossing. Chances are the pedestrians don't want to hold the way to the signal to cross. And then we have, yeah, you know, two more maps or one more map, you know, in terms of the speed limit. We have the speed limit varies in the corridor. North of Wedmore, speed limit is 45 miles per hour. Lower at night. South of Wedmore, from Wedmore to Rand, it's 40 miles per hour. So the speed limit varies. And it is street lighting, something that we mentioned before, you know, the need for infrastructure. There's street lighting on the corridor. Fortunately, street lighting on the segment is only covered at this point from Prince to Rand. And then from Prince to River, there's only street lighting at the intersection. So if you travel at night, it's dark. So, those are the things that we're going to be presenting, analyzing to see, hey, these are the challenges of the corridor and the opportunity to, that we have to make the corridor in safety and mobility be
based on the data. So for now, this is the data that I have. Again, it's just high level. September, we want to go deeper into more, you know, fresh data, near misses, a bunch of, you know, cool things. Same with the October meetings. Any questions?
I do private right now. I can't have it. Yeah, we got a lot of data. We went with 8 years of data. Yeah, we have a lot of data. We analyze it by mode, by location, by mover, a bunch of data. Whatever. Seems like, you know, share my little page.
The equity section, I appreciate it that you all have an equity section. The aggregated phases of the equity, obviously the purpose of the presentation, is a message that you're making to inform the equity lens to look at specific neighborhoods, because there's a lot of difference. You know, you go to the first area, aren't very clean, those numbers change significantly, where you have very low income, racially diverse, underinvested communities. So I think it's really important that you're making decisions about where to put certain infrastructure, equity lens, knowing that these are underinvested neighborhoods, and that often this is the only public funding that we get is from these kinds of projects. And then just real quick about the mentioning the pedestrian traffic at Global First, and adding lighting there as a remedy, I think that needs to be looked into deeper. There's, you know, obviously a phenomenon happening to this gentleman mentioned the housing community that's largely, you know, what we're seeing there. And so I don't think just lighting is going to be sufficient to ensure the safety of that community. I don't know what the solution is, but I think, you know, novel solutions.
Yeah, no, I love the, you know, the points. Yeah, so the first, you know, we kind of laid it on with our equity. Kind of the basic, you know, we figured it out after that November meeting. We did a lot of the forward safety situation. And then for the second point, yeah, we use it as an example. I wish we could use the line in it, technically, when I work with the action.
A lot of interaction, you know, we all know.
Sure, there's. Yeah, no, even more than example that I have arrived. I don't know when I go into a photo of the data.
High level, I just wanted to.
Yeah, no, I know. I wish it was.
Yeah, so I think
the tree equity score and other kind of regional data sets.
The crash data, do you have that ranked in terms of like consequentially? Like, I mean, that the video that you showed us was, but it wasn't near miss, but that would be pretty low consequence. Got hit at like 5 miles an hour versus like a high energy impact with like,
yeah, we,
you know what I'm saying, like T-bone or something.
Yeah, yeah, we, you know, for both, you know, yeah, or even for the database, we classify those depends on the time for the near miss. You know, it's not the same when you have a time between the two the vehicle, the pedestrian, the two vehicles, you know, 5 seconds and near miss versus 1 second. And it's also, we, you know, based on the video analytics, we can get the speed of the cars. So we're talking about a car making a right to 10 miles per hour, so versus a car going straight at 45 miles per hour. So yeah, we prefer that.
To your other crash, it's always very small.
Yeah, we have
another type.
property damage or vehicle. It's all I think.
Yeah. Okay, thanks everybody. So we're at the portion of the meeting for open discussion. So any questions or any topics? We've covered a lot of ground here tonight. A lot of information's been delivered back to the task force members this evening. So I'm sure there's a lot to process. I do want to make sure you know that a copy of the presentation will be available to you. We post online too, don't we? Yep. So it'll be on our, when we post the conference, there's a recording of the meeting that gets posted online. And so all of this will be available for further review as we go along. Any questions? Topics for future agendas? Yes.
So is it likely that the bridge portion is going to be the highest capital expense? Or not necessarily?
So the question is, will the bridge be the highest capital expense?
Yeah, not necessarily. Or do you know what the highest capex is going to be?
The road's very expensive. Pavement, just pavement's very expensive. The drainage system's very expensive. All the underground infrastructure. The bridge is there. It's all there. Just putting in lighting. We're going to run a new one. It all adds up. It's pretty amazing. But the bridge is certainly what we wanted to be most expensive. But I would wait to say this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
The city standard is asphalt replacement. The city has started using different asphalt mixes, different additives, different things. I know some jurisdictions are looking at cool asphalt. It still looks the same, but it has some different additives and things into it. So I think those are probably fine at all on the table. But in this case, though, for the center infrastructure, it'll be some sort of asphalt.
Shade.
landscape problems, things like that. That may not all be PCR, but that will certainly be final design.
You got your question?
Yeah, mine was basically for the buses in the school.
Awesome. Not so for the
buses. Not the buses, but the meanwhile, the bus lines where the stops are and how it's functional.
Yeah, so I think one of the big topics of discussion of this group that we're going to work through would be kind of in-street stops versus bus pullouts. There's passionate opinions on both sides of that topic, so that's something we're going to rely on you and kind of navigate through that together. So there's different options. A lot of times you're putting the bus pullouts, so those have an impact on on-time pullouts for the buses, but they allow smoother travel for people driving versus doing it in-street, which... So yes, it's in scope, it's going to come out from the side. We don't have a specific recommendation. That'll be probably one of those more final design type.
So, are the
best
stops and whatever
coming out of the same budget? Looking at this budget, we have road improvements, it's not affecting the operation.
The actual bus stop, not the
Yeah, that'd be part of the pedestrian environment, that'd be part of the project.
Wildlife and watching. Crossings
for wildlife.
So we do have, that's part of the environmental, is going through and see, there's a biological evaluation. So, pets and animals. Ever done a wildlife crossing in town before? I don't know if you're familiar or anything within the city.
Most of that's been kind of on the urban periphery through the RTA projects.
Yeah.
So, maybe you can speak a little bit. There's a lot that happens just kind of naturally through the culverts if there are washes that point out.
Generally, you're correct. So, there's a lot of factors that go into it as to what suitable location, what's optimal, where the wildlife going to go. For me, it's a natural one that we protect with the urban. And all that. But generally, in an urban environment, the naturalists and biologists do not want to facilitate that. That's not the healthy interaction. But generally, we try to shy away from that, but we're not going to be able to stop animals if that's the natural areas. But it's usually concentrating on the rivers in an urban environment.
I see you guys. I just need to try it.
Yes.
there's a lot of, you know, different projects, you know, that have a lot of putting up hours out, doing something to say. So you have 3,000, and it's given for 4 hours per hour, that's your week. A good day, it's feeling that they are doing that projects, these projects, and it's even a kind of picture. Also, we have only one similar empty project.
I saw a couple other hands.
Okay, so are there any of these topics you want to go deeper on? Now is the time to prepare presentations at future meetings. So for the information about communities, let us know and we can start kind of getting those into the flow.
Next month, you
okay.
Promise that's coming.
On the docket.
Crash data.
Not to be morbid, but.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, safeties. Safety is number one, yes.
There's going to be like a lot of interesting, kind of like, at least new to the US, interception, interchange designs that have been kind of thrown out there, like that. The one on. How much are we going to be interacting with those and like considering those?
No, absolutely. We see this, so we're treating this as kind of our marquee complete streets project that we're going to be delivering under that policy. It's the first time we have this impactful of a project to kind of deliver that has been kind of conceived and delivered under the complete streets policy. So we want to kind of use the best in practice for safety, for accommodating vulnerable users. We're looking at that kind of evolution of the intersections, and we're going to be exploring the appropriate applications of them. So the one that we're starting to get a lot more traction around the country, we're still really doing the Dutch intersection or the protected intersection. We're going to be looking at locations almost for potentially to incorporate that where it's appropriate in the context. We've already got two in design right now on Grant and Elvenon and Grant and Mountain. So those will be kind of the first ones that get rolled out in the city, but we will also be exploring that here. We're also going to be looking at some different, and we've already started discussing as a project team, it's probably a little premature, but how can we kind of handle those major intersections where we have high volumes going in both directions and kind of balancing all of those challenges we saw with pedestrian crossing behavior. So through that safety line, kind of how do we create it?
Right now, construction.
It is under construction.
It is. It's the first one in the city.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm super interested in learning more about these platforms. I think we all have emotional ties to certain things, but I think I love to be like, I know we have a lot of those. It's hard to see what I've learned from the land that was. I think that would be just interesting to see the now as we're going forward, you know, how to apply that to the how.
Do you want to take any other questions or we can catch you guys afterwards? Soon we'll be around. Okay.
All right. Additional meeting.
That was it for this.
Okay.
So, additional meetings. Patrick, the question was right now we're the fourth Thursday.
Yep.
And do you want to go to the third Thursday? One of our co chairs, the advanced. Fourth Thursday runs into a number of holidays through the end of the year, so there'll probably be a lot of shifting. The third Thursday seems to be a little bit cleaner, so there's no action tonight. There's a formal action, and we're going to post it out for the next several months. And of course, we'll look at conflicts of other holidays and So that's our action. So we are going to move to the third Thursday.
Six to eight.
We'll look at Satori as a location, and if the school K
can accommodate us. We'll look for similar locations in the corridor. We will be meeting in the first half.
Right.
Okay. Move to adjourn.
It's up to Chair's pleasure.
There you go. We are adjourned. Want to make sure we get your questions.
Thanks, guys. We want to chat. We'll be around.
Thank you. Thanks so much. We'll be back next month to talk about safety and our public engagement. Yeah, if you're on that task force, we will keep your name.